Excuses. Excuses. Been looking over the last few days at lists of excuses. And here are three of the top excuses for getting off work. So some of you might be thinking of the possibility of using these excuses, maybe even for tomorrow. The first excuse that they say is quite effective is to phone in and to say that you have got a case of explosive diarrhea. And apparently the key word in that excuse is the adjective explosive. No one wants somebody who is a human whoopee cushion at work. So explosive diarrhea apparently is one that works all the time. There's one that works apparently if it's a woman who has a male boss. She phones in and she says, "Sir, I'm sorry to tell you, I'm dealing with really bad PMS. Now, the reason that that works is because most men are very embarrassed and feel awkward when that comes up. I would join that number of people. And at the same time, let's face it, men, we are scared silly of a woman with PMS. Some of you are going, "I don't know if I should laugh or should I just stifle that in?" That's okay, because the third one might work better for you. And the third one is to phone in and say, "I've got a really bad case of head lice." It does nothing for your reputation, but apparently it might get you a couple of days off work. Okay, so those are apparently three of the top excuses for getting off work. I'm also told of a student who wanted to get out of homework. So the next morning he shows up and the teacher walks around to see their homework and he said, "I am sorry, I was not able to complete my homework last night. Instead, I was downtown at a rally supporting school teachers so that they might get a higher wage." I don't know if that, does that, okay, it won't work with hardened veterans like my wife, but maybe there's a teacher out there who would be sensitive to it. One of the more creative excuses I came up with was a fellow who phoned in and he said, "I want to let you know that I can't get in. My dog Rover just swallowed my keys, and right now we are hitchhiking to, Rover and I are hitchhiking to the vet office." So there's another creative way of excuses. Now let's be honest. I'm just going to put this paper right here. There would be a good excuse to finish the service early where you've got a fire. Let's face it. Most of us have a very well-developed excuse muscle. It's that kind of reaction. If I was to say this morning, the missions committee would like some new members. Is that fair, Gail? It's an accurate request. Or if I was to say the worship council, Rick, I know that we're looking for some new folks to help out and to participate. My guess is, almost as I get those requests out of my mouth, your excuse muscle has gone into overdrive. It's, "I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm inexperienced. I'm not as good as that." Or our favorite excuse, like, "I am just too busy." And all of us know that we've got those excuse muscles that are working really well. I almost had an excuse for not being here this morning. We were one of those silly couples that were out on the roads yesterday in Hamilton last night. And we were heading back on the 403 and all we saw, we didn't see much. We saw whiteouts all the way along and ended up spending a romantic night together in Woodstock. I can't think of a nicer place for a romantic evening than Woodstock. But I want to tell you, the establishment where we were at, they told us that years ago, Donny Osmond had been there. Now, come on. I think they're working on the Bieber, but he's got other issues that he's dealing with these days. But that would have been a good excuse. The snow, sorry to use that word. I know it's a four-letter word for many of us. Become a little bit of a curse word. There's more of it coming. But snow is a good excuse. But we have excuses. I made the mistake. I was over at the doctor's the other day. You know how it is when you're going to see your doctor and they're checking you out to see, you know, how's your weight, how's your blood pressure, if you're like me, what's your blood sugar like? And my nurse practitioner, her first question, oh, John, what are you preaching on this coming Sunday? And I said, oh, excuses. And I thought, oh, great. That just blows it, because I'm really good when I'm sitting with the dog. I've got a whole list. If you're interested afterwards, I'll give you a whole list of excuses that you can use with your family doctor. My guess is they've heard them all. Excuses. We're going to discover today that if you're a Christian and you've been involved in church life, there are all kinds of excuses. Often these excuses seem very legitimate. There are some we looked at the start that are phony, that aren't really true. But some of us might be thinking, John, I've got some great excuses. We may think if God is calling this church to do some things that, well, we've got some really good excuses for why we might say, God, hear you, but not really sure if that's relevant for us. Excuses. This morning, I want us to look at this segment of the story of Moses. And I can only come up with a very simple, straightforward title, and that is excuses. My guess this morning is some of you are going to go, I can't believe. I thought I was original in using that kind of excuse. But this morning we're going to discover with Moses that he became a master at excuses. So it's part two in our sermon that we've called The Call. And I just want to review again. We looked last week at the burning bush. And the message coming out of that burning bush, the voice of God says to Moses, so now go. That's one of the main words used throughout the Old and New Testament for commands, for instructions from God. And we know that that's still a very applicable word for you and me. Go, Moses. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. This is a high point. Moses has been waiting for this kind of command for 40 years. Maybe we think at this point in the story, Moses goes back to Zipporah. I was going to call her Zippy. I guess maybe that was his, it's Zipporah. Maybe that's what he called her, though. In heaven, I'm going to ask Moses, did you ever call Zipporah Zippy? That's not silly. You could tell I had a long night. Just let that one go. We'll have to edit it from the tape. But maybe we would have thought he would have raced back and said, I can't believe it. After all these years in the desert school of Midian, I finally heard the voice of God, and this is what he's telling me to do. Let's give me a high five. He goes to Gershom, his firstborn son, and he says, this is great. You know, I named you. What a name to call you. Your name means I am a foreigner. I'm an alien in a foreign land. But now I've got purpose. We would have expected quite a celebration. After years and years and years and years and years of waiting on God, finally Moses hears these words, go. I'm sending you. I have an assignment for you, Moses. You're the man. You're the man of my choosing. Go to Pharaoh, because you're going to bring my people out of Egypt. We're going to discover this morning five excuses. Many of you like to take notes. If you're taking notes, great. Some of you've got that grid already going in your mind. That's good too. Here's his first excuse. Moses' first excuse really is captured in the words, who am I? But Moses. Isn't that always a turn of phrase wording? But Moses. He said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Who am I? Now, Moses had been in the desert school at Midian for quite a while. And my guess is that, as we said a couple weeks ago, he was taking this course with Professor Obscurity. Moses had gone from thinking he was a somebody to taking a course on becoming a nobody. But God's intent was that he would be someone that God himself would use. But Moses had such a sense of inferiority. He had been driven to such a state of humility that he says, God, who am I? Hey, when I was 40, I was young and spry and strong. I'm an 80-year-old. Who am I that you should send me. And sometimes, you and I do the same thing. We go, who am I that I should help out in that area of the church? Who am I that I should go to my neighbor and share my faith in Jesus Christ? Who am I? Now, there's a lesson, because you got to know, I'm a big fan of humility. I think humility is needed in the church. It's needed at your workplace. It's needed in your neighborhood. But be careful with humility. Sometimes humility can be a cover for disobedience and a lack of faith. I'm not even prepared to call it false humility. In fact, the scripture is very clear that we need to see ourselves in a reasonable way. The Bible never teaches self-hatred. The Bible never teaches us to have an unhealthy self-image. But at the same time, even if it is genuine humility, just make sure that you don't end up using humility as a crutch, where we rock around and go, no, I'm just a lowly guy. I don't think I can really contribute much. So Moses had, over years, he had overdone it. He had developed this real sense of inferiority. Now, I love how God responds to Moses, because I would have expected God to come over to Moses and give him a lot of strokes and said, come on, Moses, you're a good guy. Come on, Moses, I'm gonna boost your self-esteem. I'm going to speak words of encouragement. Well, God does, but look what God does in his response. God said, hey, Moses, I'm going to be with you. It's not about me trying to convince you that you are great, you are awesome, you are mighty. It's about me. Because remember the formula. Moses was a guy walking around thinking he was a somebody in Egypt. God allowed him to go to Midian, where he became a nobody living in obscurity. But God wanted him to be someone. Not someone who was a somebody, but someone who could be powerful if used by God. And so God says, I will be with you. And in fact, I would challenge you. I see very few examples, if any examples in Scripture, where God gives an assignment and says, you're on your own. Go to it. Let's see what you're going to do. I'll watch to see whether you succeed or fail. Mark my word, if God is calling you to do a task, God will be with you. And that's your greatest strength. That goes way beyond whether you think you're a somebody or whether you think you're nobody, whether you give yourself an 8 out of 10 or a 3 out of 10. When God calls, God says, I'll be with you. And then this is neat. God says, I'm going to be with you. And this will be the sign to you that is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. So here's Moses. The burning bush was right there at Mount Horeb, this great mountain structure, part of Mount Sinai. And as Moses is standing there, he looks up, and the furthest thing from his mind would be that the people of Israel would one day gather at this mountain and worship God. And I believe what God is doing is quite intriguing, because God's saying there's going to come a time, and I'm going to give evidence of my presence with you, because there is going to come a time where the people of Israel will not only be brought out of Egypt, but they will be brought to this place where they're going to worship me. Now, why it's an important sign is because when they worship God at the mountain, it's not the end of the story. And I would argue that Moses is going to be in need of many reminders that God is going to be with him, even when things get rough, and they will. Even after the people of Israel are brought out of Egypt, God is still going to say to Moses, here's your key to being able to fulfill the call. I will be with you. Well, let's move on. And you again would think, well, that seals the deal. Moses now is ready to go. let's get to the next segment of Moses going to Pharaoh. But the next excuse Moses draws is about what I'm calling finite understanding. And it's as if Moses is saying, what if I don't have all the answers about God? Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? And so for Moses, this has to do with, how am I going to respond? What am I going to tell people when they ask me questions about God? Now, I've done a lot of study on this, and I'm taking a position that's not typical of most commentaries or scholars, but I'm pretty prepared to stand on this position. The question, what's your name, seems kind of strange. What kind of question is that? But you need to know that back then, in Old Testament times, a name is incredibly significant. Moses had the name given to him by the princess of Egypt, Moses meaning drawn out of water. He was drawn out of the Nile. He gave his son, as I said earlier, a name which means I am an alien in a foreign land. Now, there's a name for you. So I think it's significant that when we look at names in the Old Testament, they represent something. They represent character. They represent the attributes of someone. And I think that's the key. Moses maybe had some faults at this time, but he was still a pretty bright guy. And Moses is figuring to himself, the people of Israel have been in bondage and misery for years and years and years. Moses figures, they've likely got some pretty intriguing questions about God. Matt, it's great to see you here this morning. I had the privilege of conducting Matt's mom's funeral back a week and a half ago. 2 days later, I conducted a funeral in Toronto that I mentioned last week. And when you conduct a funeral for a 24-year-old boy, there's people with lots of questions. I went into the funeral knowing that. I knew that he had some family members who had some pretty tough questions about God. And I wrestled with that. God, they're going to be asking some really hard questions. Why did this happen? Lord, you could have intervened. So why didn't you intervene? And I believe that Moses, as he's analyzing the situation, he's going, if I go back, they're going to be asking some hard questions about who is this God of our fathers? What has he been doing for years and years and years as we've been crying out in misery and oppression? This passage gets my attention, and I hope it gets yours. What do you say to that work colleague who has had a bad experience in their religious background? They got some tough questions about God. What are you going to say to that family member who is struggling, who looks at his financial situation, who looks at some health issues in his family? He's got some tough, tough questions about God. Let's see how God responds to this excuse. Moses saying, I don't think I can go because if they ask me tough questions about you, God, if they ask, what is his character? What is his attributes? What is his name? What am I going to say? Well, this is what God says to Moses. God said to Moses in verse 14, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. Now, I don't know about you, and I see that response. I kind of go, well, that helps. But you need to know, this is the very first time in the Bible, we have this incredible phrase, I am, translated Yahweh, and we have Jewish friends who aren't even able to get to the point of feeling they can say the name of God. I am who I am. And I would argue what God is saying here, now follow the logic here. I am, fill in the blanks, powerful, magnificent, holy. I am infinite. As Isaiah discovered, his ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. What I like about what God says here is he doesn't say to Moses, now, simple it down. Dumb it down for the people of Israel. They ask questions about me, like really, really try to put it in a little box so there will be full comprehension. When God says, I am who I am, God is prepared to stand on the fact that he is infinite, that he is God and we're not. And there is ways about God, there are thoughts that God has, there are plans and purposes that God has that are far, far beyond us. And I think there's some situations we need to be prepared to stand on that characteristic of God. When we say to someone with full integrity, there's a mystery to God. God is immanent, as we'll discover in a few moments, but God is transcendent. The most powerful thing I said at the funeral last Saturday was when we asked the question, why didn't Jesus intervene in this situation with young Nathan? I looked at the congregation and I gave this profound explanation. I don't know. And believe it or not, those words ministered at a very deep level. There is a time when we need to explain God. There's a time where we need to pull back and with integrity say to folks, there's a mystery about God. There's things God does. There's things that God will not do. And that's why God is God. His timing in this situation, some of his purposes and plans, an element of mystery. But ultimately, God says, I am. Tell people, I am God. When you wrestle with our finite understanding, don't say, well, we've got to make God finite. Celebrate the fact we worship, we praise a great God who is infinite. Let us never feel that we need to compromise God to make him more palatable to people. But I love the fact that God doesn't stop there. He says, I am who I am. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. God, this God who is I am, has a track record. And I know that back there in Israel, though they were in misery and slavery, they still had great oral tradition and they would share the great stories of the past, the God of Abraham. And they would think, you know what? There was a time in Abraham's experience where things didn't make sense. He had this promise from God that he would have a son, he would have an heir, and he's in his 90s, and Sarah and Abraham, they're not having a child, and then all of a sudden, they have a child. His name is Isaac, the God of Isaac. Think of Isaac. Do you think he was confused about God? When Abraham said, I love you, son, but God's told me that I've got to tie you up on this altar, that you're to be a sacrifice. Do you think at that moment Isaac was confused about God? But do you think there was a tradition in Israel of here's how God delivered. Here's how God made his purposes known to Isaac in that situation. The God of Jacob. Jacob had a son he loved very much, Joseph. Joseph sold into slavery. Things look really bad for Jacob and the rest of the family, and yet Joseph now is an administrator in Egypt and a great ruler and a leader, and he rescues Jacob and his family, and Joseph gives a commentary on the situation for Jacob, and as he says, you know, this was intended for evil. What was intended for evil? God has intended for good. So, Moses, when you go back to the Israelites, make sure you remind them that there's a past. I'm a God of history. I have a God who has a track record. You know, I find that helpful. There's sometimes I find myself in a situation, and it's just good to read about somebody who's been in that situation. Or it's good to talk to someone else who's gone through that kind of trial or that kind of hardship. And then go, you know what? God, you have a track record. You've proven yourself in the past, and that's a great reason to have confidence in you. Well, there's more that God says to... that's part of the voice of God or not. That's kind of... This is my name forever. The name you shall call me from generation to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. So God has a past, but there's also a present sense of God at work. God takes notice. God says, I have watched over you, Israel. I have seen you. Go to the handheld? Okay, I shall. I've watched over Israel. I've seen. I am concerned. And again, what an assurance to the Israelites then and to you and me now to know that God watches. He is concerned. There's not a situation here among you or in this church where God says, oh, that I'm not aware of that. I didn't see that coming. I'm oblivious to what's going on. So not only is Moses told to remind Israel of the God of the past, but the God of the present, who does watch over, who is concerned. So if we have a past and a presence, we also have a promise. And I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. So there's a promise that God has for Israel, just as he promises to us that all things work out for the good. He promises that he'll never leave us or forsake us. So this God, who is I Am, is a God of the past, a God of the present. He's a God who promises. And then he says, the elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. So God has a plan. God has a purpose in how Israel will be delivered. And then we read, and I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed towards this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters. And so you will plunder the Egyptians. I wanted to include these verses for several reasons to give you a sense of how intricate God's plan is in delivering Israel out of Egypt. At certain points, I'm sure the Israelites would have thought, this God has no plan or purpose for us. And here we see that God has a master plan. He has a design for what is going on with the Israelites. And I'm prepared to say that this same God knows what's going on in your life. He makes promises that you can count on. And he has purposes and plans in your life that will be fulfilled. That phrase there has always been one of intrigue. And so you will plunder the Egyptians. Any of you familiar with Larry Crabb knows that he coined the phrase years ago as a rationale for why we can take some of the better findings in psychology and integrate them into a Christian perspective. He says there's a time and place where we can plunder from the Egyptians. Now, I don't want any of you to get any ideas that you go home this afternoon and talk to your neighbor, ladies, and say, do you have any gold or silver or fine jewelry? Because God's plan is that I'm going to plunder them from you at some point. But in this context, as we'll see when you look at the Egyptians and their mistreatment and abuse of the Israelites, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. And God is a God of justice. And God planned in the deliverance of the Israelites to deal with the Egyptians too. So Moses, his excuse was, I have finite understanding about God. But God responds to that excuse. Here's who I am. I am his person. The past, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm a God who has a track record. The present tense, I have been looking over, watching, and concerned about what's going on in your life, just as God would say that of you and me. And then God does make promises that can be counted on. God says, I made that promise to the Israelites, it will be fulfilled. Just as God has made promises to you and me that we can rest on and count on. And then I'm prepared to say, even when life seems so incredibly confusing and doesn't make sense, our God has a plan and a purpose for this church, for you, and for me. Wow, isn't it great that this is where the story stops? But we've only looked at two excuses. Let's quickly look at a couple of other excuses that Moses has. This is what I call the fear of doubt. What if they don't believe you appeared to me? Great God, then I'm going to go back to Israel and say, yes, I had this appearance. God showed up in a burning bush. Can you believe it? What if the people go, no, we can't believe it. That's ridiculous. So let's see what happens here with this excuse. The fear of doubt. What if they don't believe you appeared to me? Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. This is one of those scripture references I wish we could see acted out. I think Moses ran scared, silly from the snake. And then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. Now, I'm not going to let that one go by. First mention in the Bible of snow, and it's very negative. Just a quick comment. Now, put it back into your cloak, God said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile, pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Fascinating scriptures. Because in the first place, back in chapter 3, God provides a sign for Moses. Now God says, if they don't believe you, if they don't believe that I appeared to you, that I called you to go to them, here's some signs. Here's a threefold proof, evidence. Now, there's two or three things I want you to observe. God doesn't say to Moses, Moses, that'll never happen. From this time on, if anybody ever says, I've been called by God, God appeared to me, everybody will just say, hallelujah. Amen. God called you. God appeared to you. I wonder if at that time God thought, you know what, Moses? Hey, there's going to be a young woman that I'm going to call to India. And most people are going to think she's nuts. Most people will try to prevent her from going. She ends up going. And I consider one of the missionary heroes of our faith, Amy Carmichael. There's going to be a young man. And a lot of people will say, come on. Why would the Lord want you to go to a place like China? you could be a successful doctor right here in England. But that fellow is convinced he has been called of God. My guess is some of you have heard the name Hudson Taylor. There's a young man, and he cannot speak worth a spit. I mean, they say he's one of the worst communicators that many have ever heard. But he's convinced that God has called him to be a preacher. And even now, the legacy of D.L. Moody lives on. You see, the reality is that often when God calls us, there is wonderful affirmation. There's the pats on the back. Wonderful, Moses. We're delighted that God spoke to you from out of the bush and has said, come and go and rescue the Israelites. But you'll notice that God doesn't dispute the fact there might be some doubt. That's why God says, you know what, Moses, I'm going to give some proof. And you know what? If the first situation doesn't work, I've got a second miracle. And if it doesn't work, let's try the third one. But God doesn't make any promises. At that point, there's a shift. The shift is God is saying, I give you a sign and you're responsible for it. I will give some signs. I will give evidence and proof to the people that I've called you. And if they reject those signs, it's now their responsibility. So I think what God is saying here to Moses is, Moses, I'm not going to pretend that you will never have any doubters or skeptics, but what I'm going to say to you is, I'm prepared to be with you, and I am prepared to give proof and evidence to the people that you are called by me. And so there you have this threefold evidence and support given to Moses. Over the years, I have had experiences. I think of a number of years ago, I sat down, and I have to be gender neutral in this description, because I think some of you know the person. I sat down with this person who was convinced that God was giving a call to a mission field, and there were so many negative responses, so many people throwing a wet towel on that sense of calling. And I am delighted every time I get a letter from the mission field. Every time I have contact with this person who had great respect for those who were directing and guiding them, but at the end of the day, the bottom line issue was, if God says go, I go. Well, you would think, now this is pretty powerful stuff. You would think at this point, now Moses is absolutely convinced he has to go. God has given him every indication. But now we have excuse number four, feeling inadequate. God, I don't have the ability to do what I have been called to do. Moses said to the Lord, I love this phrasing, pardon your servant, Lord. Pardon me, Lord. Just one little thing you need to know. Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. As someone said, he sure wasn't slow in giving excuses, was he? And wait a second, there's a disconnect here. Do you remember our first message in this series where we discovered that Moses was the most eloquent speaker in all of Egypt? Hey, Moses, wait a second. Your thinking has become distorted. In the past, you were the best speaker in the land. But when that excuse's muscle is in overdrive, there's always a tendency to distort the situation. And so here's Moses saying, Lord, you know what? You're asking me to speak before Pharaoh. You're asking me to speak before all the people of Israel. Lord, come on now. I'm not a speaker. Look at how God responds to Moses. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? And again, we see this pattern. God saying, if I call you to do something, not only am I going to be with you, but I am going to give you the ability to do what you need to do. I have read through some of D.L. Moody's sermons. And I have to confess, they are not all that impressive. I've really never seen anyone butcher the English language quite like D.L. Moody. But D.L. Moody led one of the great revivals in Britain. He led revivals in North America, and annually, pastors like me show up at the Moody Pastors Conference. Did God use him? Did God speak through the battering of the English language? You better believe it. And so I believe there's a lesson here for you and me. God says, I know you. I actually have the true perception of who you are. But again, God doesn't build Moses up and say, oh, Moses, you're a brilliant speaker. We just have to, you're a bit rusty after 40 years in the desert. You've just been talking to a bunch of sheep. Now you're going to be talking to the leader of Egypt. But God doesn't do that. He keeps on this idea that, hey, Moses, it's about me. I created your mouth. I created words. I created language. Count on me to get you through. Well, now, Moses, surely there can't be any other excuses, but Moses has one final excuse. Find someone else. Here I am. Send. Well, let's look at the text as we cap off our message today. Well, I have a problem. Do we have... It's not there. Okay, well, let me see how well I... This is going to test me. How well did I study this passage? So here's the crux of the matter. Now, you need to read the rest of chapter 4 and discover for yourself, but my understanding of the rest of chapter 4 is after all these excuses, right? So... The first excuse, Moses is saying, who am I? His feeling of inferiority. The second excuse has to do with Moses' finite understanding of God. What am I going to say if they ask questions about your character and your attributes? The third excuse, do you remember the third excuse? Can someone help me out? Fear of doubt, remember? Moses was kind of at a point of going, what if others doubt me? That was the idea, others questioning whether you've appeared to me. We just looked at the fourth excuse, which was Moses' feeling of inadequacy. So this fifth excuse, then, is Moses saying, God, I appeal to you. God, please send someone else. And we read two things in the passage at the end of chapter 4. The first thing I don't really like to talk about, but God became really angry at Moses. Moses had tried his patience. God had negotiated, had worked through these excuses with Moses, and it's almost as if Moses is saying to God, no matter what you say, God, I'm sticking to my position. And we read that Moses pleads with God, and as a result, God becomes very upset. Very angry with Moses. He's saying, Moses, what more could I do? How much more could I promise you? I'm calling you to go, and Moses, you're refusing. Now, it seems to have a happy ending when God says to Moses, your brother Aaron, he can come along with you, and the two of you are going to be kind of speaking in front of Pharaoh. You're still going to go, Moses. But you got a partner. Now, I've heard some sermons where people say, isn't this wonderful? God always provides a partner. And I think Aaron in many ways comes through. But follow us along in this series. Because we're going to discover there's going to come a point in time where I will argue Moses regrets that he didn't follow God's plan A and settled for a plan B. Because even such a dear brother as Aaron, we're going to discover is going to turn against Moses. Boy, what do you make out of that? Again, I don't want to try to explain God, and when it gets into the will of God, I could explain a lot of theology and use a lot of really big terms to impress you, but there's a lot of mystery to the will of God. What I will say is I believe God's ideal plan was for Moses just to simply go. Going with Aaron, going with his partner to Egypt, was a plan B. Did it work? It worked, but it was not God's ideal plan. So let's sum up. God is calling you and me to unique areas of service and unique areas of ministry. There's some of these big calls that come at strategic points in life. It might have to do with your vocation. It might have to do with where you live. It might have to do with these strategic choices in life. And my appeal to you is, listen hard to God. And when you know that God is calling you to go, go. Don't say no, but go. There are calls that you and I get every week where God is calling you to share your faith with a neighbor. God might be calling you to make peace with someone you've offended, to seek forgiveness. But in the bigger picture, what we need to appreciate is that when God says go, you and I need to practice speedy obedience. No, I'm not saying that you sign up to every request that's made here in the church. But this is a time I want to step out and say that I fully believe that God is calling one or two people this morning to go to you, Gail, either after the service or sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and say, Gail, there's a tugging going on in my heart. Or as we said last week, Gail, there's a burning bush in my backyard. I can't ignore it, or I'm going to burn down. If God is calling you to that kind of task, don't allow your excuse muscle to trump the call. To say, but I'm too old. Well, I think I'm too young. Or everyone's favorite excuse, I'm too busy. There's some of you who could be up here on the platform as part of a worship team. If God is calling you, you might be going, but I'll pick on someone. I'm not as talented as Rick. Rick has a great voice. I don't think I can match his voice. And I'm sure if you were to talk to Rick or others on the worship council, they would say, that doesn't matter. We're not looking for clones of one another. If God is calling you, be receptive and obey his calling. God says, if I'm calling you, I'm going to be with you. I'll give you the ability. I'll give you all kinds of proofs and evidences to support you along the way. But if God calls you or me, let us be men and women who practice speedy obedience. God calls. Will we obey? Will we have faith in the one who is calling us? Before we come up, we've got a great song to finish the service this morning. I'd like you just to spend a couple minutes, eyes closed, head bowed, and ask the question of God, God, what are you calling me to do? What are you calling me to do? But a year ago at this time, I realized God was calling me to go to Africa. And you need to know that I came up with more excuses than you can imagine why I shouldn't go to Africa. When you're a diabetic, believe me, it gives you a whole range of possibilities. But I discovered that it was a call of God and I needed to obey it. Hey, is God calling you to go to Africa? Is God calling you to go on a missions trip? Is God calling you to connect with your neighbor this afternoon as you're shoveling driveways? Is God calling you to go to that person that you've been ignoring or brushing off? And God is saying, you need to get things right with that person. No more excuses. A time to get right with God. All over the world, people hear the voice and calling of God. And that's one of the great things about being part of the Christian faith. We can respond to God. There are one or two of you this morning, and the call of God has to do with your destiny and your faith or lack of it. And this morning, God is calling you through Jesus, who says, come to me, and I will give you rest. I will give you what you need spiritually. My appeal this morning is listen carefully to the voice of God. Let's stand, and we'll close the service with this song.
The world began, the stars they sang, and all the angels shouted for joy, and looking back through history, your people, they have always had a song they must sing, a song they must sing. We are the people of God, we'll sing your songs here on the earth, all over the world, your song will resound. All over the world, your praises ring out. We're living to see your name and renown. All over the world. Young and old, near and far, there's a place for every heart to join in the song. Join in your song. Every nation, tribe, and tongue, come together, join as one, give glory to God. Glory to God. We are the people of God. We'll sing your songs here on the earth. All over the world, your song will resound. All over the world, your praises ring out. We're living to see your name and renown. All over the world. All over the world, your song will resound. All over the world, your praises ring out. We're living to see your name and renown. All over the world. Great is your name and great will be your song. Great is your name and great will be your song. Lift up our hands and pray. We lift up our hands and pray. For holy is your name. All over the world, your song will resound. All over the world, your praises ring out. We're living to see your name and renown. All over the world. All over the world, your song will resound. All over the world, your praises ring out. We're living to see your name and renown. All over the world.
Well, thank you for joining with us this morning as we seek to know him more so that we can go out and give his the power of his name all over this world. Thank you for joining with us. You are dismissed.